How do you know if you are eligible to get finance to buy a business? Hi, I'm Jared Krause. I'm the host of the Buying Online Businesses podcast. And today I'm speaking with Stephen Spear, who is the founder and the CEO of E-commerce Lending, where they help people get SBA loans to acquire online businesses. And in this episode, Stephen and I discuss what size businesses you can buy using financing, what size businesses you can't buy using finances. We also talk about the four-stage process to get the deal across the line when you are using financing. We also discuss the time it actually takes to decide to get finance for a business, to being approved for financing, to actually owning and acquiring the business and having the loan settled. And there's so many factors within that that Steve and I discuss and share nuances on. We also talk about what you need to have or get done before you go away and apply for finance to be eligible. And we also discuss how important assembling a team of professionals is when you're buying a business. And this is absolutely critical. We also discuss what successful business buyers have in common. The ones that Stephen speaks to and sees why they're so successful, why they buy businesses and how they are able to achieve great results compared to some people that struggle a little bit more than others. Now, there's so much value in this podcast. Episode, we do talk about buying a business. So if you haven't yet got my due diligence framework, make sure you go away and get that. It's what a lot of people are raving about. It's my due diligence 2.0 framework. It's what I use, it's what my clients use to help people make millions of dollars and save millions of dollars. You can get that by going to buyingonlinebusinesses.com/free resources. Now let's dive into the pod. Do you have a website you might want to sell either now or in the future? We have a hungry list of cashed up and trained up buyers that want to buy your content website. If you have a site making over $300 per month and want to sell it, head to buyingonlinebusinesses.co/sell-your-business or email us at info@buyingonlinebusinesses.com because we will likely have a buyer. Details are in the description. Stephen, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
Yes, it has been. It's been a number of years. I'm looking forward to chatting to you because so many things have changed. May even discuss the craziness of the FBA market throughout this chat. But first, lending. There's not too many options around lending for buying an online business, and you guys have been doing it for a while now. Where I want to start is like for people thinking about getting started. Yeah, I know that you said you're started moving a bit up market now. You're helping people acquire larger acquisitions. We mentioned that before we hit the record buttons. What's the minimum amount that people could sort of get financing for when they're looking at buying an online business?
In terms of loan amount, $500,000 is our minimum. I know that SBA, some lenders go down to $350,000, but $500,000 is our minimum. And our average, Jared, just for our average is now 2 million, which has drastically increased since last time we were on in 2019. So it's gone from about 1.2 million average loan size. So north of that in terms of deal size. But average loan amount right now is about 2 million on the SBA front.
Cool. And so SBA I'm suggesting it's the most common one. Is it the most common one that you go away and do, or do you have other sort of partners and financial institutions that you work with in terms of getting lending for deals?
So what we have, we obviously started our firm primarily facilitating SBA financing for acquisitions, generally up to about a $6 million enterprise value. But there's such a demand, Jared, for financing kind of at lower middle market, which is about roughly $10 million enterprise value up to, $50 million. Especially with deal sizes getting proportionately larger, there was just a really large void. So we rolled out a year and a half ago, so May of 2022, we rolled out our capital access program. And those are for deals from about $10 million enterprise value up to $250 million. So that's kind of our other division. It's vastly different than SBA financing. SBA financing is really a really good program for smaller acquisitions, kind of in that lower market. And because online businesses, as you know, are asset light, it's really the only, for all intents and purposes, it's really the only financing vehicle for those asset-light businesses.
Really, it is. It is. It's and there's also, for people that are really starting out, it's there's still a barrier to get in with financing. You know, you really need to buy something, like you said, you know, around the 500-ish K range, acquisition size, you know, and, you know, put a portion of percentage in financing. So what, you know, what sort of deposits are we typically looking at when, you know, those enterprise value from like 1 to 3 mil, what sort of deposit are you typically looking at for that, for those?
In terms of deposits or buyer injection, down payment, whatever you want to call it, generally it's 10%. There are some cases we're able to go to 5% if there's some sort of seller contribution towards the buyer equity injection. So you're able to use a portion of the seller's a seller note as the buyer injection. So that just came out last year. So really, you could potentially buy a business with just 5% skin in the game, which is pretty incredible. And it's opened up a lot of doors for many, you know, acquisition entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. And what sort of terms are we looking at? I know that nobody listening to this is going to hold you accountable to whatever average terms that you mentioned, because the markets change and finance changes in terms of interest rates and whatnot, and the environment and the climate. But what are the average sort of terms that people are looking at for those sort of acquisitions?
So with SBA, the terms are, it's always a 10-year loan. It's really kind of like you have choice of one, and it's 10 years. Right now, interest rates have gone up considerably here in the States. Right now, SBA rates sit at 11.25%, which it seems like it's going to be the high. And, information out there has had it that the Fed's going to start cutting rates this year. So that rate should be coming down, but it has drastically increased over the last, well, since last time we spoke about 4 years ago. So, but people are still buying businesses. The good news is, Jared, multiples have come down a little bit, especially on the FBA side. So, so we're seeing kind of a counterbalance to those higher interest rates.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same in Australia. Most places in the world, I know in Australia, we did have an interest rate hike recently, and I know that they are saying that the interest rates are going to come down as well. And so, when you're looking at, you know, somebody's looking at capital deployment into an asset, if you're going to invest in property, you're going to have a higher rate than what it was if you're investing now, and the same with business too. So it's something that people need to consider when with their portfolio and how their, you know, what their opportunity cost is. Now, you mentioned FBA multiples have come down a lot. The reason I've seen that happen is because throughout COVID and a couple of large equity firms were just acquiring bulk FBA businesses. And there were a bunch that bought some and they didn't fare so well. And since then, multiples have started to come down. As I believe some volume of sales for e-commerce businesses have come down from, you know, what we were seeing through COVID. And it depends on the industry and the niche and stuff. Don't hold me accountable to this, guys, but this is like a bit more of an average global look. Is that why you're sort of starting to see multiples come down, or have you got some other intel and data?
I think, you know, with the aggregators leaving the FBA market for all intents and purposes, that's really brought multiples down. And also, you know, back over, you know, the pandemic, you know, there's such a frenzy and there was a lot of, you know, there's just a lot of money out there, you know, a lot of money that government was throwing at opportunities, et cetera. There was just, everybody was really flush with cash. And I think that brought the multiples up. Obviously the amount of buyers out there that brought the multiples up, especially the aggregators on the FBA side. And with the aggregators for the most part, you know, going out of the market, we've starting to see multiples come down. Also, obviously the higher interest rate environment, we've seen multiples come down.
Yes. I love that you mentioned that. And it's the same on not just e-commerce, but with media or content businesses, you see that people, the interest rate environment coming, you know, the interest rates going up means that people have more repayments on their mortgages, like their homes, which are liabilities. And as they increase, they mean it may need to offload some assets or some things that they hold, like businesses, and sell them at a cheaper multiple than maybe what they bought them at, or what the market was at least at, you know, through the COVID period. Yeah,
so we've seen that, but that's definitely had just overall effect. Obviously on SaaS businesses, you know, we're seeing multiples still higher than obviously, you know, more product-based businesses, but those multiples are coming down, especially in the lower markets. The lower middle markets, we're still seeing pretty frothy multiples on SaaS businesses and digital marketing firms, et cetera. But on the product-based businesses, we've definitely seen multiples come down.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking seven-figure and under sort of deals, multiples coming down a bit more than eight-figure acquisitions. Is that what you mean by the middle market, eight-figure to getting close to nine?
Yeah, the lower middle market, consider, you know, like $10 million of enterprise value and higher. So the lower markets have definitely, the multiples have taken a haircut. So multiples just by nature tend to be higher on SaaS businesses as well as larger acquisitions. So the lower markets, you know, let's just say $6 million enterprise value and lower, we've definitely seen those multiples come down. We're starting to see a downtick in number of buyers going after those opportunities. So that's also a factor. It's still, I wouldn't say it's still a frenzy, but it's still very active.
Yeah.
A lot of buyers out there looking for the right opportunity.
Yeah. And so we've mentioned, you know, the three sort of main business models, SaaS, e-com, and content and media. What sort of financing, you know, do you do? Do you help finance all of these different types of business models, or is it primarily just e-commerce? I know that you know, e-commerce lending, it's the brand and the name, but yeah, like what about the other sort of structures, business models?
Well, we've always done all, you know, historically we've done all online businesses, you know, SaaS, e-commerce, whatever. We've done all of it. Applications, app type businesses, we've done all of it. What we're starting to see now is a lot of more and more of our clients over time are looking both at, you know, online business acquisition opportunities as well as more traditional brick and mortar. So we're starting to see a little bit more of that just by word of mouth. You know, we pride ourselves in the reputation we have in the marketplace. So, you know, we do have a high level of, you know, word of mouth type referrals or introductions from people that we know. And some of those people are looking at both, you know, traditional businesses as well as online businesses to acquire. So we're starting to see a lot more of that.
Yeah, that's cool. And so what, how long does the process take typically before, you know, approval or pre-approval or knowing that you're going to be able to get finance? What does that process look like, and how long does that roughly take? And maybe what do people need to have in order? And then we'll talk about like the going through the acquisition and the settlement afterwards, I guess.
So the process generally, once we have everything for our clients, the process generally takes 60 days. Sometimes we're a little challenged on getting everything from our client, but that's beside the point. We have no control over that. But there is a kind of a process to what we call here acquisition success. And that's, you know, first and foremost, we encourage buyers even prior to starting their search to get pre-qualified for a business. You know, first off, it gives them an idea of how much they're qualified for, which kind of seems like a no-brainer, but sometimes we have people that have no personal liquidity, very little business acumen, they're trying to buy a $5 million business. So we kind of give them a reality check in terms of that. Secondly, their business acumen. You know, we definitely look at people's business acumen. So those are two of the main factors. So we're able to set kind of a marker of the size of business they should be looking at. So that's first and foremost. And as they start their search, you know, we become part of their acquisition team. They come across acquisition opportunities, and they allow us to vet those opportunities to make sure those businesses are financeable. We're able to determine that. Are they financeable at 90% leverage, 95% leverage, 70% leverage, whatever the case may be, but it avoids our clients from putting in offers on businesses that don't qualify for financing. So that's kind of step two. The third step in terms of what, again, what we call acquisition success is we encourage people to get their acquisition success team together with their business broker, their lender, their acquisition attorney, their due diligence team, et cetera, and get all those pieces put together. So once they are under letter of intent, they're able to move forward quickly and already have their entire acquisition team assembled. So those are some of the things we really encourage, you know, again, prior to someone searching for a business.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And then once you've got the business, once somebody's got the business and the due diligence team and the advisor go through everything, then, you know, letter of intent turns into offer, obviously, confirmation of offer, and then you go through your asset purchase agreement or contract of sale or whatever you want to call it, depending on, you know, what business you're buying. And then you guys go to work and get the financing approved for that type of asset. Is that right? And then how does that sort of look?
Yeah, step four, once somebody's under letter of intent, they're going to run two rails. One's obviously the financing rail with us, hopefully with us. And the other one is to, you know, get going on their due diligence. So they're going to run two rails simultaneously. Otherwise, Jared, the process takes way too long. So that's one thing we encourage our clients to do. Some people think, okay, once I'm done with due diligence, then I'm going to start the loan side of things. And that's a recipe for the seller to walk away. A seller's not going to wait around 90 days, 120 days for that. So it's really imperative for buyers, you know, all you guys out there, to move forward on due diligence and the loan process at the same time. And if it pans out, due diligence, you know, doesn't look pretty and the business isn't what it was cracked up to be, then that's okay. You know, we move on to the next deal. So that's really, you know, when we look at all the deals that we've closed, the people that follow, you know, our four-step process do have that acquisition success. And we've had other people put in letters of intent on businesses that don't qualify for financing. We've had people not following our directive by not assembling their acquisition team. We've had people not run two rails simultaneously, and it really, they struggle quite a bit in terms of crossing the finish line. So that's why we really encourage that four-step process on our end.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for the share. My next question I want to ask you, Stephen, is, you know, what are the most common things that hold people back from being able to get finance, sort of before they come to you? What are some of the ducks that they need to have in a row before they say, hey, Stephen, I'm ready to just run at this and get some finance and acquire something? What are some of the things like they might need to set up personally or with structures or whatnot to be able to set themselves up for success with you guys?
I think the key is really focusing in on what type of businesses they're looking to acquire. You know, we sometimes have buyers that come to us that are just spraying and praying all these different types of businesses. You know, really hone in, you know, I encourage all our clients to really hone in on what really the type of business they're interested in, as opposed to just kind of seeing everything that's out there. And that generally, you know, allows them to focus in and ultimately acquire businesses quicker. So that's first and foremost. Secondly, personal liquidity. You know, some people want to buy businesses, but they simply don't have that personal liquidity available. And also sometimes they do have money. It might be sitting in a retirement account and don't realize they could actually use what we call here in the States a 401k and be able to use those funds, or an IRA, individual retirement account, for their down payment or their deposit. So there are certain ways of being able to maneuver someone who doesn't have that, you know, instant cash and be able to access retirement accounts for that acquisition. So that's some of the things that we teach our clients to about. But personal liquidity is sometimes, you know, a challenge. So they have to bring in other people, you know, partners to come up with the additional funds or a shortfall of funds that may be needed for an acquisition.
Love that you mentioned, aside from finances, having some liquidity, I think is awesome. And obviously, massive caveat. Yeah, people taking out money from their 401k or IRA, depending on your age and your circumstance, is going to be different for everyone. We're not suggesting that is for everyone. I'm not a personal advisor, financial advisor, but yeah, no, consider speaking to somebody who is a practitioner in financial advice. But I love that you also mentioned know what type of business you're looking for before you go away and get finance. Now, that can take time. And I suggest people to do this, and they often learn that when they come in and work with me through my courses and stuff, is what sort of business is right for you. Look at a bunch of them and narrow it down to what personally fits and can help you achieve your goals, financial goals, but also time goals as well, of like how much time do you want to spend in the business or with team on the business, how much, you know, a stress expense is something that most people don't talk about when you're a own a business, is the expenditure of stress or time thinking about the business or in the business workload. So it's worth people really understanding, like, this is the business that's going to help me achieve what I actually want with that business model, and it's set up this way. So then when you do find that, is you're looking at just that market and you get really honed in on what the value of that business is in that actual small market, whether it's just e-commerce businesses in that particular niche that have these particular marketing models or sales channels. You'll know for sure the value of it when you just only look at those versus the whole atmosphere of all the different types of e-commerce businesses. Do you see that as well, Stephen?
Absolutely. Excellent points. Yes. And also, you know, we have some clients that may be more on the tech side and they're wanting to buy a product-based business, for example. And they're like, oh man, I never thought the fact that I have to know, you know, supply chain. I have to order products and deal with suppliers, and I've never done that before, you know. And then they come to the realization, like, stick to what they know, or stick to what I know. I should be doing this, not looking at all this other stuff. So, but there's so much information out there, and that's part of a little bit of a challenge. You know, we have clients kind of spraying and praying all over the place, trying to find that right opportunity. And there's so much information that comes at their way that they just, it becomes overwhelming. So back to your point, you know, sit down, write it down. Okay, here's the type of business I'm really looking for, you know, and really kind of hone in on that and have more of a targeted approach. You know, with help through your course, have more of a targeted approach rather than just kind of spraying and praying. Absolutely.
It's one thing to get finance, and that's a whole ball game in itself. But the acquisition, the business that you buy, like, you're living and working and running on this business, you know, for however long, you want to make sure it's going to be right. Otherwise, it will cost you money. You know, the due diligence throughout is absolutely critical. So what are some of the things that you see the most successful people do that go away and purchase a business using financing with you guys? What separates them from the people that are sort of starting out?
They're doers. They get it done. You know, they're actively looking for businesses. You know, we have on average over 100 buyers that reach out to us. You know, they're looking for businesses, they're at various stages of that search, etc. And very few of them are doers. You know, they kind of, you know, kick the tires or kind of search but kind of not. And those people never end up buying. Whereas we have other clients. As a matter of fact, I was on the phone with one just shortly before you and I got on this podcast. He is targeted. He is committed. He's putting in hours each and every day to find that right business. And I think that's the differentiator. It's really, unfortunately, guys, it's really not a part-time job. If you really want to find a business, even if you have to, you know, you have a day job for 40 hours, you got to put time into it on top of that to really get traction on your search. I mean, that's the best advice I could give. It's not a part-time endeavor. You got to put time into it to find that right opportunity.
I love that. I love that you say they're doers and you need commitment. All this stuff is mindset stuff that I teach. You know, if you don't have the some people aren't born with a high achieving attitude or the attitude of a high achiever, the mindset of a high achiever that just comes naturally, that mindset comes naturally to them. But you can formulate that. And I have helped people do so with understanding what your vision is and being committed to that and certain practices. So once you've got that, understanding that, right, yeah, it's not just a, you know, I'm just going to try this and test it and see how it goes. No. Like if you want to like buy a business that's going to help set you up financially, do it. Like go for it and commit to it and make it your main thing. You can still do, you know, your part-time job on the side and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, if you're just going to try something out, this, you know, trying to buy a business is not something you should just test, right?
No, not at all. And also, you know, a lot of it takes, you know, organization and just setting everything up. So when you do find that right opportunity, you know, it's going to work out. You're not done doing it in kind of a haphazard way. So that's really important. Another thing to bring up, you know, in terms of looking at our buyers post acquisition, they don't mess with the business until they learn more about the business that they just bought. You know, they're not, you know, firing the staff and thinking they could do it all on their own. They're leaving things alone for at least typically in terms of what they tell me, typically 4 to 6 months, they're not changing anything. And they're just learning what thing they can do to the business to really increase sales and bring in their own skill set to the table and kind of leverage that skill set to grow the business. But, you know, we've had a few instances where buyers buy a business and then they try to change everything. It's like they try to recreate the wheel. And in some cases, honestly, Jared, it has not gone right. They end up, you know, killing the business. We've had although it very rarely happens, we've had at least 3 cases in the last 5 years where they did exactly that. They either fire staff or changed everything, whatever, and ruined the business. So my advice to your audience is, you know, buy the business and just sit tight, make notations, whatever. Don't change anything until you really, really learn the business, you know, kind of on the ground floor or on the front line basis. And then you could start making your little changes here and there.
I don't often see this happen. Why? Because I actually teach what you just mentioned is like when you buy a business, do nothing and learn it for a period of time. And hence why I don't see too much of it because my, you know, my field is sort of conditioned into my approach that I teach about buying businesses. But for people listening, a bit, what is a business? It's a system that produces a result, typically money. Why would you buy a system and then change it? It's a crazy thing to do. Why not learn the system and then optimize it slowly over time? And typically everything that we do in business and life that I teach is if we're going to do something, it's kind of like you're running it as an experiment and you should never just change the whole thing for a new experiment. But just try little experiments like testing, you know, your sales channel against another sales channel and whichever one ends up being better, you know, then you put more resources into that. But you run at the same time on two different rails like you were talking about before to experiment against each other and pressure test it versus just going to stop this and we're going to do this instead. It's like you're breaking a system that you just purchased that's been built up over how many years and how much resources. So I love that approach and I love that advice, Stephen. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been awesome to chat. I really appreciate your time. Where can we send people to check out more about what you guys are doing at eCommerce Lending?
Just go to ecommercelending.com or you can email me, Stephen, and that's Stephen with a PH at ecommercelending.com.
Awesome. I'll put links to that in the show notes as well, guys. Thank you again, Stephen, for coming on board. Anybody that's thinking about getting finance to buy an online business, or knows somebody that wants to buy an online business that could use financing to, you know, get that acquisition over the line, make sure you reach out to eCommerce Lending. I've referred so many people to you guys over however many years, Stephen, and I've heard great things. So, yeah, keep doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on, Jared. Appreciate it.
Hey, YouTube watcher. If you thought that video was good, you should check out this video here on the 2 best types of websites beginners should buy. Or check out my playlist on how I made my first 100K from buying websites and how to do due diligence. Check it out. It's an awesome playlist. You'll enjoy it.